Over the past 2 weeks, the drumbeat of war has echoed from Washington to Beijing, from London to Ottawa. We're not talking about missiles and tanks, we're talking about trade war. What in the world is going on? And are we really on the brink of war? What's the big deal? Should we even care? Join us on TW Now as we ask and try to answer these very real questions from a biblical perspective. Today on the program, we have two gentlemen who are regular guests. First, I'd like to introduce Mr. Rod McNair, who's a regular guest on our program, and he's drawn attention to this issue with a commentary in Tomorrow's World Today. Also, Mr. Dexter Wakefield. Welcome, Mr. Wakefield. Mr. Wakefield is also a regular guest on our program, so welcome, gentlemen. Glad to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
Mr. McNair, let me begin with you. We hear all this talk about trade war, and you wrote a commentary in our Tomorrow's World publications today. You asked the question, what is trade war? Let me ask you, what is a trade war? What are we talking about?
Well, I guess in the simplest sense, and there could be more complicated ways to explain it, but basically, when, as opposed to two nations or a group of nations working together cooperatively in terms of their economic issues and policies, where they begin to make decisions that are punitive, that are designed to put themselves at a distinct advantage to the detriment of the other. And typically it will escalate. And when one, as one nation does this, then the other will up the ante and back and forth, and ultimately they're competing and they're really trying to harm the other nation without guns and bullets, rather through their economic policies.
Okay, Mr. Wakefield, I want to bring you in on the conversation. You wrote a piece in Tomorrow's World magazine approaching a year ago, I believe. I'm looking here. May-June issue of the Tomorrow's World, almost a year ago. And the title was, let's see here, Trade War. Actually, it was just Trade War, wasn't it? So are you a prophet? Did you have a crystal ball that you were able to see into the future? What's your take on this? Can you give a little bit of, I should say this, how did you know it was coming?
Well, you're referring to the May-June issue, and people can go back and read that for themselves, but it wasn't that hard to do. All you had to do was listen to the campaign rhetoric that was going on, and a lot of this stuff was being talked about and set up back then. Also, as I say, we read the Bible as well, and in doing that, we see some of the events that should be developing in this period of time. But I think, in no small part, what Donald Trump, the candidate and also his president, was doing is reacting to policies set in place by the Obama administration over the last 8 years. For President Obama, that America is a source of more problems in the world than it is in solutions, whereas President Trump believes in American exceptionalism. And I believe he's trying to undo some of these things, particularly where he President Obama subordinated American interests to the other interests of other countries in trade matters.
Okay. And I do want to mention to our audience, of course, as always, if you like the program, go ahead and click like, and you want to share it, that would be great. I'm going to personally do a better job. I would attempt to do a better job at addressing questions from the audience. So during the program, if you're one of our live listeners, if you would like to submit a program on our Facebook feed or the YouTube feed, go ahead and write your question in there, and our producers will go ahead and the idea is that the best question that will really help add to the discussion over the first 15 minutes or so, we'll go ahead and address in the last part of the program. So go ahead, please, and write a question in if you have one as we go along. So back to the discussion, back to Mr. McNair. So what are the ingredients that produce a trade war? What are the components that go into a trade war then?
Well, I guess one thing would definitely be where one nation feels like they are have a distinct disadvantage, that there's an unfair situation between their goods and the goods of the other country, and that there's a lack of equilibrium, and clearly it's not in their interests, it's not in their nation's interests. It's not in their constituents' interests to maintain that. So that would be the beginning stages of it. And again, we're talking about individual steps that would ultimately lead to a very punitive, uncooperative situation. But that definitely would be one part that there's a distinct inequality.
So laying the groundwork for trade war by these things. Let me ask you, is that what's happening today?
Well, that's exactly what Mr. Trump is responding to.
Okay.
That he is responding to the fact that that there are other nations that are able to access our markets, and yet we don't have access to their markets in the same way. So he's attempting to deal with this situation.
So taking the next step, Mr. Wakefield, you used in your article here a term. You used the phrase weapons of trade war, I believe, weapons in a trade war. Yeah. So now we're taking the next step. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, it is like a war, and there are weapons in a trade war. One of the obvious ones would be tariffs. We're seeing now tariffs on steel and tariffs on aluminum, and that's a percentage that is put on additional cost that's put on anything that is imported, and it raises the cost, and then less is consumed of it. Another is regulations. They put regulations on things that limit what can be imported or the nature of those goods. Another is currency manipulation. China's been accused of keeping their currency very low relative to the U.S. That gives them a purchase advantage of exports over imports. There's several more. Quotas. The U.S. has quotas on sugar. Ask anybody in Florida in that area. We have quotas on how much sugar can be imported, so that protects our farmers there. Government subsidies, big deal in China. They have huge subsidies for their steel industry. So that helps their steel industry have lower prices. And then the big one today that's going on right now that I think is a target of this is the sort of the pay-to-play, whereas our people, our countries, can't have access to Chinese markets unless they transfer their technology to China. It's kind of, some people think it's extortion, others just pay to play, but it operates as to create disequilibriums like you referred to between the two countries. So China's promised to reconcile these, but they haven't done it so far.
You know, we use this term trade war. Is it hyperbole? Is it an overstatement? Why do we use such an aggressive term? We see the headlines, but in daily life? I mean, are the results really something that impacts those of us walking down the street? Or is it just a lot of hype just to sell newspapers?
You know, I think going back to something I heard a long, long time ago, and the business of newspapers is to sell newspapers. Today it'd be on the website. Okay, so what's the point? It's big news. It attracts a lot of attention. Are we really going to a trade war? Maybe that is a, you know, maybe we'll come to that conclusion here in the over time, but probably not. There's a lot going on that is behind the scenes. There's hyperbole being thrown out, but is it really going to go to an actual trade war? It doesn't appear that way, as Mr. Wakefield was mentioning. There are already tariffs, there are already trade barriers going on, and there will be negotiations as we see this level out.
So maybe we'll just continue on sort of choppy seas, but things will go on as per usual. And as it has through much of history, do we have some examples in history that you would say actually show that we can lead the trade wars can actually lead to shooting wars? I mean, in other words, is it a possibility, or is it again just something that is rough water time?
Well, I suppose a trade war could lead to shooting wars, but a lot of times the worst thing that can happen is when you have a full scale trade war, like we did after the Smoot-Hawley Act that impacted so much difficulty on the Great Depression.
You mentioned, could you repeat that again?
Smoot-Hawley Act.
Could you tell us about that a little bit?
This was done around 1929, 1930, whereas President Hoover wanted to fulfill a campaign promise where he says that we're going to have some tariffs put on other agricultural products coming into the United States and reduce industrial tariffs. Well, this got to be a bill in Congress, and when everybody saw what was there, they started log rolling, and everybody put something on it. All of the different congressmen started attaching things that protected their domestic industries, and finally, they had some sort of protection on 20,000 imported goods into the United States. Well, guess what happened? Protests from 23 trading partners all over the place because they were being hit by it, and then they responded with retaliatory boycotts and tariffs of their own. They started shooting with back and forth, so to speak, with tariffs and regulatory barriers and also simply boycotts of American products because of these things. So it greatly exacerbated the problems of the Great Depression, and I think everyone agrees on that.
Is there any, are we left with any choice, though? Because don't we have to do something to prevent our economy from being attacked by brigands from other countries? I mean, do we have any choice but to take measures like this?
Would you like to take
it? Go ahead.
Okay. We have multilateral negotiations, and that's usually the way it's handled. They negotiate these things out, and they have negotiated agreements whereby you have certain protections for your economy and certain protections of ours, but it allows them to increase trade between the countries, helps everybody, and everybody agrees on that. But unilateral action, like we're seeing right now from President Trump, is this a pretext for negotiations? Many people think so. We'll probably talk more about that here in a little bit. But it can lead to retaliation, one to another, tit for tat, and then it accelerates into a trade war. It's destabilizing. So that's what everybody's watching, and that's what everybody's nervous about.
Okay. I'm going to redirect just a little bit here. As you brought in the Trump administration in Washington, D.C., I think it's a good opportunity to bring in a guest that we have scheduled for the program today, Mr. Ray Klor. We're going to Skype Mr. Ray Klor in to help us to understand a bit more about the workings of Washington and the State Department. Welcome to Mr. Klor. Mr. Klor worked in the State Department from 1977 to 2016, and he worked in seven main locations around the world, including Haiti, Cameroon, Canada, Jerusalem, Jordan, Paris, as well as working out of Washington, D.C. So I do want to welcome Mr. Klor. Thanks for being with us on the program today, Mr. Klor.
Thank you, Mr. McNair. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all.
Could you add to the discussion from a Washington insider's point of view? And you may not like that moniker. Maybe you'd rather I not refer to it that way. But from Washington point of view, from the State Department point of view, perhaps that's fair. What's going on here? What's the strategy?
Well, I've been listening to the discussion, and I just wanted to add one more example where trade policy actually did lead to war, and this was before World War II. The United States was the primary supplier of oil for Japan, and the United States decided we were going to use our oil as an economic weapon to try to get the Japanese to withdraw from China or at least stop their aggression in China. So we cut off oil exports to Japan, which made it almost impossible for the Japanese economy to work. And that led to the Japanese not only attacking us in Pearl Harbor, but also they attacked south to Indonesia so that they could obtain a more reliable supply of oil. So trade policy can lead to shooting war, and World War II with Japan is one example of that.
Okay, thank you. Could you add your sense of a reaction from the international community from the different areas where you have been stationed? I know it's a broad brush here, but how is the United States viewed when we take an America first approach to and even embarking on tariffs and this type of thing? What do you think the perspective is from both our partners and those who are not on such good terms?
Well, I was stationed in Paris for 4 years, and Europeans, they do have a very strong trading bloc, the European Union. They have also become accustomed to having good access to the U.S. market. They become accustomed to the United States providing at very low cost to them a military protection umbrella so that they don't have to spend much of their gross domestic product on military expenditures or defense. And so when the United States takes some action like the tariffs on steel, for instance, Europeans do make a lot of steel and they do export some to the United States. They are going to react pretty negatively because they feel that they have a market almost as large or larger than the United States, and they will definitely want to protect their interests. So if we do impose tariffs on steel coming in from Europe, Europeans will impose countervailing tariffs on other products that they think will hurt the United States economy.
Do you think that that we'll really be hurt? The average person on the street would truly be hurt by anything that Europe does. I mean, does Europe even matter to us because of the size and the strength of our economy? Should we even care?
European tariffs will probably be targeted to the congressional districts of those people who actually have votes on the relevant committees. I've heard talk that maybe they would put a tariff on bourbon. So would that really hurt American consumers? I don't think so. So in one sense, I don't think that the Europeans want to completely disrupt the economic relationship because they've been making money hand over fist from us for the last 70 years. So they're going to do things that they think would get some high-profile interest and coverage in the news. But I don't think that we have a real concern at this point from the Europeans.
Would it reach a point where we would? In other words, is this all a negotiating position that as time goes by we'll all level out and things will go back to normal? Can we do irreparable harm to our position in leadership or in economic leadership by taking this type of approach?
We can always do irreparable harm. It depends on how far you take any particular action. I don't think that in this particular case the Europeans will want it to go that far because at this point they do not have the military capability to defend themselves. They still depend upon the U.S. Air Force to move their troops if they need to be moved. They still depend upon the U.S. Missile umbrella to protect them. So at this point, they're not going to push it because they really don't have the power to come back behind and stand on their own 2 feet militarily.
Okay, thank you. Could you stay with us for a few more minutes? I'd like to come back in studio, but we may bounce back and forth if you're willing.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so let's move to the next phase of this discussion. Back from the dramatic details of the headlines to the 20,000-foot view, is there a fundamental cause, a fundamental human cause for the effect of trade wars? Why does this happen among nations?
when we look at, okay, What are the fundamentals of any issue, whether it's political or economic or a family, a local community issue? We have to go back to the Bible. We have to go back to what God says, how He created us. He created our being able to function in society. Okay, so there's something called greed. There's something called when one person sees something that someone else has and they want it, as opposed to having a cooperative approach where you work and you produce and you supply, you help supply a need for the other person, and they work and produce and supply a need for you, and it's mutually beneficial.
But does that really work in today's world? I mean, that's from the Bible. We can say, sure, these are biblical principles, but I mean, some are going to argue that that's okay in the Bible, but in real life, in a capitalist system, a system that relies on greed, so can biblical principles work for not just the individual, but for the nation, for nations? I mean, isn't greed good as in terms of a capitalist system?
You know, it's interesting that just a few years ago, I recall reading a quote about how much the fact that the British Empire first, and then the American structure, the military and economic structure, political structure, had opened the economies of the, around the world and protected those open borders, relatively speaking, and had played a part in bringing up the overall economic level of a couple of hundred countries around the world because of those a bit of more openness to the economic structures and the fact that, hey, we can actually do better cooperatively than just it's all me and I don't want to help you.
But then didn't America get great by being America first? In other words, by putting, is that not why we're a great nation? Because we've put ourselves first and other nations second? Isn't that why we're where we are?
Well, there's a view that says putting America first also means fair trade. That when you do multilateral negotiations and everyone increases their own economic activity from having more trade going back and forth, that constitutes putting America first. And that's the general multilateral view. I don't think the Trump administration is opposed to that. My personal suspicion is that they are getting into this in a round of negotiations to improve America's position. But free trade must be fair trade as well. As far as greed being necessary for businesses, I've never agreed with that, and I spent a good bit of my career in it. Greed is incompetence in the business world, and people who are greedy tend to make bad mistakes. Corporations look after their own interests in deals all the time. That's what a joint ventures are about. They get together, and each one is carefully looking after their own interests, but they have aligned interests in order to accomplish a goal. And that's what I think fair trade and proper multilateral negotiations mean.
Can biblical principles be applied to national interests? You know, can they apply in a macroeconomic way?
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about how they're like the Bible says. God says, if you don't work, you don't eat. Okay, so that's a very specific, very detailed example. But when you apply that on the overall, in a macro level, what you find is the more people are working, the more people who are going to be able to put food on the table. These can be applied on the small level. They can be applied on the large level.
You know, we could spend the whole program talking about the statutes of ancient Israel. For instance, some say just hen, adjust balance and weights and balances and so forth. That means there has to be equality in transactions, and one person isn't taking advantage of another one by surreptitious or wrongful means. Another one is one law for everybody. Everybody operates under the same thing. Many of these biblical statutes have come up to us and influence our laws and trade negotiations and these things now. I think we already have many of these principles in operation now simply from the Judeo-Christian ethic that has risen up into the world today.
Let's move into the last segment. We're almost out of time here. We've got about 5 minutes left. So I want to go to Mr. Thor again for the next question and encourage anybody who would like to ask one last question. We're going to try to go ahead and get some more questions on the program. I'm sorry I got away from it here with time, but we've got just a few minutes left. So, question for you, Mr. Clore. After spending a great deal of your life and your professional life working for the State Department overseas, various postings, Jerusalem, Paris, Haiti, and so on, can we really function as a nation by applying biblical principles on a national basis and not be just run over by other countries, and they're observing or trying to look to their own best interests. You've lived in places that are even to some degree competitive with us. What do you think? Can we apply godly principles on a national basis amongst neighbors who don't?
Yes, I think in terms of a macroeconomic idea that you all were just discussing, God is actually a capitalist. If you look in Matthew 25, Jesus had a parable where he said he was giving capital to his servants. And then he went away and he wanted them to do business while he was away, and that God is seeking a profit. So we know, based on history, based on all that we have seen in the world today, that actually capitalism, not unbridled capitalism, but capitalism as a general macroeconomic principle, does lift all boats. It does help everyone have a better standard of living. And I would say just also one other biblical principle is about keeping your word. In the U.S. Constitution, there's provisions for the sanctity of contracts. We should be very careful about giving our word and signing international agreements. But once we do that, we should keep our word. And I think this is one thing that other nations, they actually depend upon the United States to keep our word. We've had a tradition of doing that. And as long as we continue to do that, there will be, I think, a certain amount of order and stability and predictability in the international economic sphere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me ask this then. Let's take it into a more personal application then, okay? Can we apply what we're seeing on a national and international stage? Can we apply what's happening and the threats and the potential danger and the warnings and the ways to overcome those dangers and all that we've been talking about on a national and an international stage? Can we apply those personally in terms of how we deal with our neighbors, how we deal with each other, how we deal with our bosses or employees or employers and all of that? Can we apply those principles in our life in some way? Can we make some sense, some personal sense of this, gentlemen?
Well, we deal with others in a cooperative way is an important thing to do. And with your employer or other employees, you're trying to help other people get their jobs done, and you're working together towards a common goal. And I don't think anyone seriously wants to go to a completely unilateral point of view as far approach as far as trade negotiations or other things are concerned. We have allies all over the world, and we look after each other. We have agreements for trade, we have agreements for defense and everything, and we have cooperative arrangements with them. So I do think that we can consider applying some of these principles more to the world situation, assuming that it's fairly done.
Yeah, absolutely. We can apply lessons in our own life. The Ten Commandments, two of them deal directly with what we're talking about. Thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not covet. I mean, we are to work, we are to provide for ourselves. And then in the New Testament it says, not only don't steal, but work so that you can help others. In other words, having a sense that there is, as we are doing our work, as we are providing for ourselves, where does our wealth come from? Deuteronomy talks about how when you have goods, you have homes, you have vines, make sure you remember that your wealth comes from God. It is not you who enabled you to have it. And that reminds us that we need to treat our neighbor well, because it's not about just unbridled selfishness, it's about serving God, and He'll take care of us.
I very much appreciate what you said. And just to add to it just a bit, God gives us the power to get wealth. You can work yourself to death and never achieve anything. We can do that individually. We can do that as a nation. As far as our nation turns away from God and rejects Him in their knowledge, He may remove that power to get wealth. And that can affect us both nationally or individually. We have to remember that God gives us the power to get well.
30 seconds left. Quick question for all of you. Should we worry about a trade war? Should our audience worry about a trade war? Mr. Clore?
No.
Okay. I like it. That gives us 20 seconds for Mr. Wakefield and Mr. McNair.
If it destabilizes, we could have tit-for-tat retaliation and not go in the direction I think the president hopes it goes in. I hope it goes in the direction that he does and that they keep it under control.
You get the last word. Hold on. How does this work? My brother gets the last word.
I love it. The answer is yes.
Good. Hold on. Would you like to say more?
But not yet. We do find a time of great war in the future, and undoubtedly that's going to involve economic war as well, sure. But it doesn't appear yet that we're there yet.
Okay, well, our panel today gives us a bit of hope and confidence that we can go on at least for the near future as things are, so that's good. But I do appreciate the discussion today and wrestling with this topic as we do look at the headlines. And we try to look at the headlines through a biblical perspective, recognizing biblical principles and how they actually do play into life, real life, today, personally, on a national basis, help us to give understanding and help us to get a grasp on what's happening in the world around us. Thank you very much for being with us today on TW Now. Glad to have you with us. Come back next week. And if you like us, then like us. And if you'd like to share us, please do that as well. Thanks for being with us. Have a good week then.